Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Hey everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. We have a very special guest today. She was responsible for the Time of Eve Kickstarter. She's the president of Pied Piper Incorporated. No, not the one from the HBO show, but they represent Directions, which is a Japanese studio in the United States. It's Anne Tomoko Yamamoto. Anne, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is really, I'm excited.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So this Kickstarter was this year?
It was in 2013,
Right, yeah, okay. Yes. A little backwards on this. There's been a lot of Kickstarters, and we've had a lot of them on the show, so keeping them straight is a little tough. But but let's start with you first. So you're the president of this company. Right. Tell us what they do.
Well, Pied Piper is me, basically.
Tell us what you do.
I admit, everything from the janitor to the accountant to the salesperson to everything. And I set up Pied Piper in 2011 after I relocated from Japan to San Francisco after the tsunami earthquake to take my family back home. Previous to that, I worked at Directions, and I worked very closely with the producer, Tom Nagai, and was very closely and heavily involved in Time of Eve as it was getting off the ground as ONA, and then as the movie was being produced as well. So I come as a former member of Directions, and then taking that relationship and then seeing what we could... I set up Pied Piper to see what we could do overseas, basically.
Oh, okay. And was this that it sounds like that effort was born from wanting to relocate?
Yeah, so it was kind of a lot of different factors that coincidentally laid the groundwork to be able to launch this Kickstarter.
So you worked at Directions, and you were there when you were there when Time of Eve was starting production.
Exactly. Yeah.
What? Tell us a little bit about what it was like to work there. I know it's not a big studio. Like, you look up their production credits, and it's, you know, it's this Pale Cocoon,
right?
The other one, the cafe one.
Right.
And What's it like to work there? It's little studio in Japan.
Yes. Well, actually, Directions, the bread and butter for Directions in terms of what their work is making shows for NHK and Benesse and some other major, mostly television clients. So most of their work is actually TV production. And so it's not a traditional anime studio per se. And the producer, the head producer at Directions, Tom Nagai, one of his TV shows was a kind of talent discovery show on NHK that discovered new digital upcoming video artists. And then every week they'd present their work on the TV show and give them prizes. And it was it ran from 2000 until 2010, I think. And in the course of producing that, he got it. Discovered a lot of really exciting, interesting new creators, and one of them was Yoshioda. And so he worked with Yoshioda to develop what turned into Aquatic Language and then Pale Cocoon. And so it was really a side project for Directions. And it's not their Directions kind of figured out how to put together this animation project very much outside the mainstream of anime production. So very much a maverick and very experimental and figuring out how to do it along the way, I guess you could say. So it was very exciting and a lot of learning as we went along. And if Directions also has worked with other independent creators. But each creator is really unique. And so none of the other ones have taken this same path as Yoshioda-san in terms of creating something that really took off in the anime field. So, so if that answers your question.
Right. Yeah, no, it totally does. What is the, okay, so when you look at the production credits for Time of Eve, it's directions right. And then Studio Rika. Looks like.
And that's Yoshioda-san, and that's basically him.
That's him, okay. And so people know, and this is a fun fact, apparently he created the Noitamine opening, that little animation.
I guess that's not something we were directly involved in.
You're right, but it's a fun fact.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, he's done like a lot of different cool things, yeah.
Okay, so that's sort of his production shingle, and then, you know, he's done most of his work at directions.
Yes. Okay. For Yoshioda-san?
Yeah.
He worked with Tam Nagai for Time of Eve, and since then, he has gone on, like, for Patima.
Right.
The next film that he worked on. Directions was part of the production committee, but there were a lot of other producers who got involved with that. So kind of Yoshioda has since moved on and works with other producers now. So what Tam Nagai really wanted to do was to see Yoshioda grow. And so he's continued to mature and now is involved in a lot of different projects. So it's not like he's still, you know, under the direction shingle or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. Would you say Time of Eve? Cause I mean, he moved on. Potem Inverted was a big deal. Like that was a major,
right.
It was a major film and it right. You know, that Blu-ray didn't need a Kickstarter. Right.
Right.
So, would you say Time of Eve really, really put him on the map? Like it really
I would
got,
say so, but yeah. You know, one thing that's really is unique about Time of Eve is that because it did start out as such a small project, mm-hmm. The only rights holders that are involved are Directions and Studio Rika. There's no production committee behind it. So in that sense, the rights are very simple. It's just Yoshioda-san and Tam Nagai talking to each other. And any decision that has to be made, it's just the two of them, you know, an email exchange, a phone call, and it's done. And so Tam Nagai could do that because he was bootstrapping the project up as just 15-minute episodes and then putting them online one at a time. And so he didn't really need to have any outside partners until it came time to do to put it together as a movie. And Tam Nagai and Yoshioda, they didn't have the capacity to do a theatrical release. And so for the movie, the Japan domestic rights, they brought in Osmic Ace to do the movie theatrical run and do the whole distribution for the DVD and the Blu-ray in Japan. But for all of the other rights regarding Time of Eve, Tam Nagai, Directions, and Studio Rico hold them 100%. And that includes international rights for the movie, which is why we were able to do this Kickstarter, basically.
Right, and not having to deal with a million people on a production
exactly.
committee. That makes you the envy, I'm sure, of a lot of people working in this business.
Yeah, so that's a very special aspect of this project. And, you know, that is because Tam Nagai is outside the mainstream anime world, that he could do something as unusual as just say, well, I'm just going to hold on to the rights and I'm not going to split them up and I'm just going to see what I can do with them. You know, he could take that kind of stance, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, having a small, you know, a small production like that, the mm-hmm. film does not look like a small production at all. It's a gorgeous film, like with really nice character animation. And I really thought the color palette alone was just remarkably sophisticated. It doesn't look like a low budget production.
Right.
I know people say like the most important thing is time and staff and not necessarily budget when it comes to anime. But in terms of that production, I mean, it looks like $1 million. I'm sure it was not that to produce. What was that like? In terms of the production, like for Time of Eve, what kind of resources were you working with?
Well, it was, I think that the biggest challenge actually was to figure out how to transition Yoshioda from working totally on his own to being able to work with a team of people, because his previous work, Pale Cocoon and Aquatic Language, he did those 100% on his own, and he did just take a lot of time and did everything on his own in his own computer. And I think that that really is part of what technology was making possible around that time. And he was really inspired by Makoto Shinkai what he was able to do. So it's definitely kind of, in that tradition. So then with Time of Eve, I think for the first episode, it was like bringing on a team. I think it was like five or six people and trying to split up the roles. Bringing on Chiyama Ryusuke to do the character design, and then other storyboard artists. And the challenge was really how to take Yoshioda's artistic touch and how, it's like he did everything before. So how to be able to break that down into different parts but still have the end result be infused with his own creative vision. So that was really the biggest challenge as the project was getting off the ground. And I think by the sixth episode, they really had it. It was really running pretty smoothly. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely, that was kind of a rocky process.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So when did you first notice that American fans were being drawn to this to this thing?
Yeah, well, the first time we started streaming the first episode, just shortly after the Japanese episode went live, we screened it on Crunchyroll. Mm-hmm. And we got a really good response on Crunchyroll. It was a lot of enthusiasm. People gave really positive feedback on the show, and we're really excited for the upcoming episodes. We ran a few contests where we asked people to send in like fan art or interpretations of different scenes, and then Yoshioda would judge them, and we got really good responses on that. We did a few Q&A sessions with the audience, with the Crunchyroll audience, so we knew that there was a fan base in the U.S. And also Crunchyroll is global, and we did subtitles in French and Spanish for Crunchyroll as well. And so, we had a sense that there was an interest overseas for sure. But we didn't know how big it was. And when it came to the movie, we actually did shop it around to the major distributors. Like we talked to Funimation and Manga Entertainment, and we got different offers, and we came very close to actually licensing out the movie to an outside distributor, but the numbers were not totally convincing, like the offers that we were getting. And so Tom Nagai was like, this was like 2010, right, when the movie was coming out, and he's like, let's just hold on to the rights and see, maybe we'll have a better chance in the future. So that's why, again, it was like a decision that, again, laid the groundwork for the Kickstarter to be able to happen.
I mean, ultimately, I have to imagine you made more on the Kickstarter than anyone was ever offering you for those
rides. Yes. Although I have to say that when the Kickstarter blew up the way that it did, and we got this explosive amount of support, Tom Nagai and Studio Rika, Yoshioda, were like, put all of the money into the production. So to be totally upfront, they did not take a licensing fee off of the production costs.
Oh, okay.
Off the Kickstarter. For them, it was just like, this is like, we've gotten the biggest gift that we could ever get from fans around the world, just showing this kind of support mm-hmm. for the production. And so they were like, just put everything back into making the best possible rewards and the best possible give back that we could offer to the fans. So for us, you know, as you know, we have taken the Blu-ray and now we're offering it as a commercial release. So, you know, that's both our guarantee, you know, against, you know, overages and in the Kickstarter budget, but it's also a way to earn back some kind of fee to give back to directions and to Yoshioda.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's all very honorable, but surely you guys want to eat.
Exactly. Yeah. So we do hope to have this be, you know, something that will give Yoshioda and directions the leeway to do other great projects, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And the thing with a successful Kickstarter is that once people notice or see that, oh, wow, this is really blowing up, and they find out about it after the fact, and then they get excited and they get hyped up to see it, and you're offering them at least, so now people can go buy it. It's available on your site now.
Yes.
Which is cool.
So, you know, one thing I can definitely say is that the end result of what we got through, what we were able to make through this Kickstarter, just is incomparably, like, miles beyond anything that any distributor could have been able to come up with.
Right.
You know, so in that sense, it's really a win-win for everybody involved. You know, it's for the Kickstarter fans who were involved, and then, you know, future fans who discover Time of Eve and, you know, buy the Blu-ray. You know, it's like we were able to get access to production material that no, you know, U.S. distributor would have been able to touch, and, you know, to be able to clear the rights to the CD, to the soundtrack, and to get the rights to the material in the bonus book and everything. So, you know, in that sense, you know, the end result is also, you know, something that's really pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. It sounds like ultimately this was the best way to do it. So so let's talk then about the birth of the Kickstarter. Were you paying attention? Obviously you must've been paying attention to other anime projects that were finding success on Kickstarter. How did you come to the decision to do it, to do it via Kickstarter?
Yeah. Well, definitely we'd seen Kickheart, and we were like, this is really interesting because it's like clearly such a great experience for both the producers and the backers who are involved. It's like a collaborative process. And then we had actually, Directions had released the ONA as a Blu-ray and put English subtitles, very basic, you know, no bells or whistles, nothing fancy. And then as Pied Piper, I started to sell that through basically PayPal, and we got, like, say 200 orders, and that was really exciting. But we, you know, we didn't expect. And then I started selling it through Right Stuff, and then we got like another 400 orders, and that was like spring 2013. And we were like, wow, there's this, you know, Kickstarter platform, and we know that there's at least 400 fans out there who love Time of Eve enough to have bought the ONA with basic English subtitles, nothing fancy. So it was like, if we could get at least 300 backers, we could get enough funds to do the Blu-ray of the movie. So that's how we set the goal of $18,000. We're like, we know that these, you know, 300 people are out there. So let's give this a shot. And I didn't really think that there were more than 400 people out there who were going to pledge. Like, I was like, you know, I think that's going to be, maybe we'll get 500 people. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, so that's where we came up with our goal.
Yeah. Turns out there's 2,700 people.
I know. Who would have guessed? It was just blew us away. I mean, I can't even, it was just like our jaws hit the ground in the first 6 hours. We were like, what is going on? Like, and it turns out people had all of this passion for Time of Eve, and they were just looking for the chance to show it. We had no idea.
Right.
it was like this meeting of, like, you know, it's like, you know, we love you all, and we didn't know that you loved, you know, the movie so much.
Right.
You know, so that was very exciting.
So what did you learn about running a Kickstarter while you were doing it? What were like your chief takeaways? Like
my chief takeaways during the actual time of running the Kickstarter?
Yeah, while you were running it, you know, what did you learn?
What I learned is, well, you know, it's like you gotta. It's really weird. It's like, on one hand, you got to be prepared for failure, which is, you know, you don't get enough backers, and you got to have plan A, B, and C for like trying to get more backers. On the other hand, you have to be prepared for getting too many.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have to have like stretch goals set up beyond, you know, tenfold, you know, 100-fold, in our case, 1,000%. And we did not have that in place. And so from, you know, day one, when we rocketed past our initial goal, like we were on the phone and, you know, on email trying to get access to every single other property out there related to Time of Eve, because everything else involves other partners, whether it be the soundtrack or the official fan book or the light novel, or, you know, canisters and, you know, cups, you know, all the different right. things. So, you know, that was what we were putting our energy into. And that is, I guess, our takeaway is like, you know, you got to have plans laid out for scenarios in both directions, you know, things coming not up to what you expected and then things going way beyond what you expected.
Right. And anime fans have very high standards for their physical releases. So I would imagine you were also getting, it's going to have this, right? It's going to have that. It's going to have this. It's going to have, like, we need famously like 100 different subtitle tracks on this thing.
Right.
You know, full disclosure, the co-host of this podcast, Justin Savakis, he did the mastering for your Blu-ray.
Yes.
And, he has talked about how it is the most complicated Blu-ray he's ever had to put together.
Yeah.
And was that born out of just people telling you we want this and the people letting you know all the options that they want?
It was more born of the way that, you know, once we were able to get access to all of the content, we ended up with, you know, the movie plus the audio soundtrack, I mean, the audio commentary, plus like what, 7 different bonus videos plus the 2 short films. So it's just like a huge amount of content. And then what really made it complicated was deciding to do so many subtitle languages.
Right.
And that was really in response to the international makeup of the backers. Of the backers, of the like roughly 2,700 backers, like 1,300 of them are in the U.S. Mm. And then everybody else is, you know, all around the world. It's like, you know, we had a huge contingent from Germany, from Russia, from Italy, Spain. And so all those languages are represented. So that was really what made it complicated, was how to have all that, you know, the number of items plus, you know, multiply that by 10. We decided to do full Japanese subtitles also because we believe that, you know, that's something that we know that, you know, it just should be there, you know, so that fans can have access to the original material as much as possible. So, you know, that was another, I guess, takeaway is like, as the project gets more complicated because of adding these stretch goals, it completely transforms the actual production process. So, you know, initially I had gotten a quote and had set up a working relationship with a Blu-ray authoring company in Chicago that specialized in indie productions. And, you know, I actually started working with them and we worked together for about the first 5 months of the project. And then it just became clear that they could not handle the quantity of video that we had, plus all of these subtitle tracks. And they couldn't tell me that they couldn't handle it, but it just wasn't moving forward. They couldn't answer my questions about, you know, how are we going to deal with, you know, flashing, overlapping subtitles and, you know, how are we going to deal with switching between different menu options. And so then it was like scrambling then, like, how are we going to find an authoring studio that can handle this project? So that's, you know, that was a big takeaway. It's like, as the project gets more complicated, it's like sometimes the partners that you initially were going to work with to actually produce are not the same people that are you going to be able are going to be able to follow through, you know, with the way that the project has developed. And so, actually, Sam Pinansky, who was helping with the English subtitles, I was like, you know, it's like, Sam, I'm totally stuck because the producer, you know, the authoring house is not handling this project. And this was like, you know, like already we lost like 6 months in production. It's like, help, help. So he was like, you know, you should talk to Justin. And then it turned out Justin was a backer. And I was like, oh my gosh. So he really, really, I mean, this project would not have happened without him.
Yeah, right. Well, I know he was a fan of it. He actually just had me sit down and watch it recently. And yeah, so I just saw this like last week.
What did you think?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Really? What did you like?
Really, I thought it was just very thoughtful. There's a few scenes I thought were particularly kind of genius in articulating the theme. I thought there's a scene where sort of the lead artificial intelligence character, the forgive me, I do not remember the character's names. She's sort of in robot mode, but then she sits down in front of a mirror and is sort of doing her hair.
Oh, Sammy, right? Okay.
Yeah, and it's clear that she has developed the full range of human emotion.
Exactly.
And I thought that was just kind of genius. It reminded me, it was like a much more warm and it reminded me a little bit of that Spielberg film, Artificial Intelligence, I'm sure you've heard a million times. But a much more like warm and inviting and maybe a little bit more thematically complicated in terms of, it deals more with emotion, I think. And that I thought was really interesting. But I really did enjoy it. But I had been meaning to, it's not like I was avoiding it or anything. I'd been meaning to watch it because I had, you know, that's one of those, Time of Eve has been one of those projects that everybody talks about how great it is. And I just hadn't gotten to it yet. But, you know, people would have form avatars and everything, and I would notice all these people talking about it. And it's like, I got to sit down and watch that at some point.
Did you watch the dub?
No, I watched it subtitled, but that was the next thing I was going to ask about. So at $50,000, you had a stretch goal to dub it in English. And so were you in charge of that?
Yeah, well, we had actually talked to Michael Centurniklas and Stephanie Shea from NYAB Post right when the movie had come out in Japan in 2010. We met up with them at Tokyo Anime Fair, and they were in love with the project, and we really wanted to do an English dub and do an international release at that point, straight from Directions. That was still when I was working at Directions. But, you know, we were going back and forth on the budget, and, you know, they were like, you know, this is what a dub costs. You know, it's like, you can't get it below like $40,000. It just cannot be done for, you know, to do justice to the project. And Tom, the guy, looked at the numbers. He's like, you know, I don't think we can come up with, we can't put $40,000 on the line for an English dub for, you know, an audience that we don't know if it's out there or not. So we shelved it. And then when we had that money for the Kickstarter, the first thing I did was I got in touch with Michael and I was like, we've got the money, let's do it. And that was like just so exciting because it was like, that had been a dream for both of us, you know, for 3 years. We were like, we want to do this. And, you know, finally it's like, it was like a dream come true. You know, it was just so exciting.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool. And yeah, it is impossible to get a decent dub, for less than about $40,000.
Yeah. So we ended up, you know, it was a little higher than that. But worth every cent. I mean, he just nailed it. Right. I think he did a great job with, you know, starting from the script development to the casting, to his own performance as the Masaki role, just really fantastic. And it was really fun. It was just great to see what he was doing with the script. Actually, you know, he sent me back what he was working with this script writer based in LA. And, you know, they sent back the script and just the interpretation of the lines that just totally captured the story plot development plus the emotion, and then just gave it a twist that made it just fall right into place. And it was like, oh my gosh, it's brilliant. You know, so we gave him a lot of creative leeway to just, you know, do it with the script, what he needed to make the dialogue emotionally true in English. And I think he did a really fantastic job. It was really inspiring to see what he did with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. You know, it's great that there's a dub. It's great that there's a dub on the disc.
You know, and so that's another really special thing. It's like, if we had gone with, you know, if we'd licensed this out to, you know, a big, you know, Funimation or whatever in the US, you know, it's like, we wouldn't have had that ability to work so closely with the dub director or make a choice about which dub director we wanted to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, it's just like, it's so special to be able to have these choices, you know, given to us thanks to the support of the fans.
Yeah, that's really cool. Was it so at $50,000 you were able to produce this dub, and then the thing just kept climbing.
Yes.
And so how tricky was it dealing with the finances? Because usually Kickstarter successes that are too much of a success turn into a kind of a headache for the person operating them, just because managing the finances afterward in terms of deciding. I mean, you already mentioned all that money went back into the production.
Right.
But was it, I mean, was it a headache dealing with the finances on this thing?
You know, it was not a headache until the very last stage, which we are actually still in the process of, which is shipping.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, of course.
Shipping, it's like, who would know that? Who would even guess? Like, again, lesson learned. Shipping is like, can just take you down. You know, we had it budgeted out and, you know, what we thought it was going to cost. And you know, little decisions along the way ended up making it much more expensive. Like, once we decided to make it a product that was in a slipcase, it became heavier. Once we decided to upgrade the quality of the Digipak, you know, case, again, it's heavier. It's a heavier project. Mm-hmm. Product. It's we added more postcards. Once the slipcase was involved, it needed better packaging for the shipping, which makes it heavier, and it's another expense for the fulfillment side. And then, you know, if that was all domestic, it would be one story, but we're dealing with 1,500 international shipments to countries all over the globe. For our EU backers, we made a commitment to import into the UK and then ship to them within the EU so they wouldn't have to deal with customs. And, you know, it just became much more complicated, much more expensive. And we, to be honest, didn't set aside enough to cover that. And so in that sense, definitely the retail sales that are happening now that's our insurance policy against that overage. So, you know, it's not like the whole project is sunk, but, you know, we continue to appeal to, you know, fans who love Time of Eve, but we're not backers to continue to support the project for sure.
Right. Yeah. It's good. It sounds like you managed it really well, because a lot of Kickstarter success stories turn into tragedy when the people don't do their planning. But it sounds like you had it really under control.
I mean, it's definitely a challenge, you know, because once you take that set amount of money, in a sense, I mean, you're taking on the risk because your income is set, which is, you know, it's like, you know, you've also committed to what you're going to deliver, and there's still going to be a lot of question marks that, you know, you're not going to know, like, what all the true costs are going to be for production. So, you know, in that case, I can definitely see how a Kickstarter could turn into a very difficult situation for sure.
So right now it sounds like you're still mired in shipping.
We have like everything out. It's like, we're still, it's like, I mean, some of our backers in Brazil, like, you know, we ship them their Blu-ray like we sent it from San Diego, like literally like 9 weeks ago. And like, they'll email us like, oh, I just got my Blu-ray. So it's like, there's a lot of, you know, it's like, yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. So moving forward then, what is next? Obviously you've got this Blu-ray out. There was a pre-order for it looked like a book that was sort of a continuation of the story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right. Yeah. That's for the light novel. You know, the number one request that we have gotten and continue to get is like, where is season two?
Right.
Where is the follow-up? And, you know, Yoshioda actually conceived of this initially as having 13 episodes, and he've only made 6 episodes, which has turned into the movie. And so, you know, it's like the story is sketched out there, and, you know, it was originally presented as going to have a season two, and Yoshioda is still interested in doing it. And, you know, so it still lives out there as a possibility, but it's not scheduled in anybody's, you know, production plans at this point, and there's no, you know, concrete plans for that to happen. So anybody who wants to have more Time of Eve, I direct you to the light novel, which we were doing pre-sales, and it's going to be out in January. So that gives you a new take on the story through Rikyo's perspective, and it also introduces a new character who we do get a glimpse of in one of the flashbacks, but we never find out who that character is. And so it's like a whole new development of the Time of Eve story. So anybody who has appetite for more, that's definitely one place to go.
Okay. So, I mean, so the obvious question is, have you floated the idea of crowdfunding 6 more ONAs?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the idea circulates out there, but there's so many things that have to come into alignment for that to happen.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like really like, where is Yoshioda in his own kind of creative development? It's like he's started other projects now, and it's like, I don't know if the timing is right. When will the timing be right for him to circle back to this?
Yeah, it's almost like you got to wait for him to say, okay, I'm ready to do more.
Yeah, so it's really like, you know, it's like amazing to know that there's the audience out there to support the project. So that's one critical piece of the puzzle, and there's a couple other critical pieces that have to fall into place. Yeah.
Okay. Well, people can hope, I guess.
Yeah, people can hope. Yeah.
Wait till he's got a hole in his schedule, and yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got some questions for you from Twitter.
Yeah.
Just a couple here, and so we, you know, we asked about the, you know, the obvious. Have you considered crowdfunding a sequel? But from Thundersnapper, he asks, given how well this did, would you consider that approach again for another physical release? So say like Directions puts out another film or another OVA series. Uh-huh. Would you go this way again?
Absolutely. Directions doesn't have another project that's exactly kind of in line with Yoshioda's work. The other creators who Directions work with are very, very diverse in their styles. And there are a few other creators who we think are at the caliber and also kind of intersect with what fans overseas would really respond to. So we are looking into developing some new projects to launch on Kickstarter for 2015.
Okay. All right.
So you should hear, you'll be hearing from us again.
Cool. So. All right. That's excellent. Okay. Kimiko asks, what were the best and the worst things about this project for you? Like, so best experience and I guess maybe the biggest sort of hurdle that you had.
Wow. That's a big question. The best experience. I don't know. I think that the very best experience was maybe like in the closing hours of the campaign, and kind of everyone who'd backed the project was kind of tuned in just to collectively celebrate the triumph. And, you know, we just really wanted to express our gratitude. And so, you know, at that point we announced that we'd cleared the rights to the CD for the soundtrack, and announced all the subtitle languages that we were going to include in the project. And it was just really fantastic. That was a great moment to be able to really celebrate together. Even though, you know, everybody's online and scattered around, but we're, you know, there's all this activity on like Twitter and Facebook and like through the Kickstarter page. So that was definitely the most probably gratifying moment. In terms of the biggest challenge, I would have to say, again, going back to the shipping.
Okay, so sounds like that was
shipping, but also it's like, it's tricky to manage expectations, I guess. And throughout the whole project, you know, we committed to just going first class all the way with everything, from the dub to the packaging, everything. Like when we saw a better option, we went for it. But then when it came to the shipping, it's like, you know, we went for the better options and the costs were just way beyond what we had expected. And so, you know, it's something where it's like, you know, I don't know if the backers even appreciate, you know, what the differences in costs are, because they aren't sharing that. They don't see what those costs are. So that was definitely probably the biggest difficulty, okay, I would say.
All right. Let's see here. Also from Kimiko, she asks, what do you think is the reason that the majority of Kickstarter backers were male?
I know. This is very, very, I wonder that myself too, because, you know, it's like, we get data from Crunchyroll about who's viewing the, you know, who's streaming the episodes. And the split has always been like 60-40 male-female. And, you know, I think that that's close to what the demographic is. I mean, it's skews slightly male, but not that much. And I do not know why the backers are like probably 90% male. This is a mystery. It might really just weird. Be the Kickstarter demographics. But it's an excellent question. I wonder that myself.
That sounds like something that would require more research.
Yes, yes.
And also from Kimiko, do you have a favorite character or scene? And what do you look forward to regarding Yoshiar's work in general?
A favorite character or scene. I don't know. Probably favorite character is Masaki with his kind of, because, you know, he really goes through a lot of emotional anguish, but comes out of it with a sense of that he's moved beyond and has found some resolution. And so that's really satisfying to see. Favorite scene. I think I would go back to that scene that you talked about with Sammy doing her hair. And Yoshida actually added that for the movie. And it's something that he said that they put the most time and effort into to really capture the movements and the gestures. And I think it's exactly what you had said, the way that it shows the humanity, but not through anything beyond the way that she's holding her face and, you know, using her hands. And I think that's a really beautiful, exquisite moment.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, and in terms of Yoshiro in general, like as a director, I mean, are you? I mean, obviously, he can't share with us like his future plans, but I mean, I would imagine you're just following his work in general,
right? Right. I mean, you know, I think that he has a very, you know, one thing that he said in the interview, the Kickstarter interview that's on the Blu-ray, is that he wants his work to be not niche, but to really reach a large audience. He loves Pixar movies. He loves, you know, movies that where the emotional resonance is universal. And I really look forward to seeing how he can intersect his own personal vision with that level of storytelling. And I think that he's moving in that direction with each new project. But I really look forward to seeing, like, you know, I think what he really excels at is that fine-grained dialogue that really captures the textures of everyday life that makes the story so grounded and feel so real. And so, you know, I really look forward to seeing how he can still keep that kernel and then, you know, keep on becoming more and more universal at the same time.
All right. Okay, finally, sort of a silly question from Wakashi AOT. If you were given the choice between visiting Time of Eve or Polar Bear Cafe, which would you choose?
Time of Eve? Of course.
I don't know. Polar Bear Cafe seems pretty good. Okay, well, that does it for us. Can't thank you enough for stopping by to chat with us. Congratulations on the project, and good luck with all that shipping.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's really been fun to talk with you, for sure.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Anne for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.